All right, Ethel, can you hear me?
I hear you. Yes, I
All
do.
right. Well, thank you so very much for your service. I am grateful to be able to be here with all of you. I just found this meeting a couple, I shouldn't say I found it. Someone suggested it to me a couple of months ago, and it's wonderful. I don't make it every day. Oh, sorry about that. Okay. Can you see me? Okay, good. Okay, that's okay. Part of the package is the video. So I am Linda. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I have been in OA about 11 and a half years. I consider myself as this, you know, as a garden variety compulsive overeater. I am maintaining about a 30 to 40 pound weight loss over those about 10 years or so. And, you know, I heard a speaker early in the day where they said, you know, spend a few minutes on the problem, but spend most of the time that you have on the solution. So I try to do that. But what I can tell you is, as a child, I knew there was, I don't know if I knew something was wrong with me, but I was always looking for sweets, you know, stealing candy from stores, stealing food from when I was babysitting. You know, just my, we didn't have a lot of sweet food in the house. And so when there was an opportunity to get some, whether it belonged to me or not, that concept of getting more than my share, or getting food that didn't belong to me, that I, there was some kind of high for that for me as a child. So I was somewhat physically active, but I remember being weighed in sixth grade for the presidential physical fitness test back in the day, and being 111 pounds. And so I knew that I was heavier than most people or most children my age. And I'll tell you, when I think back and, you know, think about what goes on of growing up and how it impacted my life, you know, some of the messages, overall, a happy childhood, overall. However, some of the messages I heard growing up, in particular from my father, was, you know, you don't know what a day's work is. You've never worked a day in your life. Those kind of, you know, which I guess I never thought too much about then, but they certainly came into play later, more recently as well. And then the other thing I would tell you about growing up is everything on the outside of our house was absolutely pin perfect. It was neat. Everything was pristine, the yard, the landscaping, perfect. And my father would say, if people only could come in this house, they would not understand how different the inside and the outside looked completely different. My mom worked full time and had two kids. So it was just disarray in the house. We couldn't have people over. If somebody wanted to come over, there was like crazy. And so I grew up essentially with a lot of, I guess, not really realizing that all that was churning in the background, but also knowing that any time that I could turn to food, that I found comfort. It was almost like I used to say, you know, the food would take the edge off. And I knew that from a very young age. So suffice it to say, I grew up, went to college, graduate school, got a job. And what I can tell you is my compulsive overeating, all I did really was go to work, work out a little bit, eat, and sleep. And I work became sort of this whole central thing of my life. And I kept compulsively overeating. And when I would have a rough day at the office, that was the solution. And I would numb out. It got to the point where the big book says, you know, we would eat or they would drink, but we would eat. I would eat myself to oblivion because that I would, the cycle was, you know, have a hard day at work, come home, eat compulsively, pass out, wake up, start over again. So I, as I said, about 11 and a half years ago, I was surfing the internet and downloaded some podcasts. Barely had ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous and never had heard of Overeaters Anonymous and downloaded some podcasts. And in that mix was a woman who talked about her behaviors with food. And I was absolutely stunned. I was walking the dog, stopped in the middle of the street, frozen, thinking, oh my God, this is what is wrong with me. And so within a couple of weeks, I got myself onto an online meeting. And I tell you, the biggest issue I had was that I had such shame. What if somebody, again, that whole picture perfect out, everything picture perfect on the outside. What if somebody I know finds out I have this eating disorder? What would, you know, what do other people think? That has been a theme. But I got myself to an OA meeting. And I tell you this, I have such faith because I got to that meeting and the people there just expressed such love. And I cried through the whole first meeting. I cried for many, many meetings for the first 4 or 5 months. I didn't speak until the sixth meeting, a 6 month mark. I sat with these women. We read the big book. They shared. I read. I passed. I didn't share. And somewhere around 6 months, I started. The first thing I said to them was, oh my God, thank you all for being here. I tell you all that because I believe that we each come into our own recovery. It's a process. You know, it for each of us, however we get here and however, whatever it takes, I believe that we're on, you know, as one of my sponsees says, we all are on our own path. So as I said, I have been very, very grateful and abstinent for a while, for quite a while. But I got into service very early. That face-to-face meeting said, we need an intergroup rep. I said, I don't know what it is, but I'm supposed to do service. So I'll do it. Intergroup rep led to committee member, led to vice chair, and ultimately chair of the intergroup for a number of years, which led to world region service at the region level and service at World Service. I was incredibly blessed to go to World Service once. So I recommend all of that because I got to see recovery on such a grand scale. So what I want to spend my time doing is telling you that it has not been easy. When I lost my weight over the first year, I said to my sponsor, I can't get my ring sized. I'm going to put this weight back on. And it took 4 years to get my ring size resized. The clothes, I would not buy new clothes. I would not get rid of the old clothes. You know, because I kept waiting, I was like, I used to say my recovery is a house of cards. How do I know my recovery is not a house of cards? And my sponsor would say, you just do this one day at a time. None of us know what tomorrow has. You know, why do you have this? She would say, why is not a spiritual question? You know, it would just stay in the day, stay in the moment, stay in recovery, and don't get too far ahead. You know, stay where you are. So I want to tell you what I do. Most days, not perfectly. I do weigh and measure my food, almost everything. I do not do it at restaurants. I get up in the morning. I say a prayer. It's usually thank you, God, for the gift of another day. I will meditate, not every day, but at least I try to meditate at least 10 minutes a day, which I need to amp that up a little bit, but for right now, that's what I can do. I will say the first three steps of OA, and I will ask myself throughout the day, you know, how have I been to service to others? How have I said the 11-step prayer? It took me to the pandemic to teach myself the 11-step prayer for whatever reason. I just kept kind of putting it off. But now that is part of what I do every day. I ask myself, you know, how do I practice self-care? Is it getting up and exercising or taking a walk or reaching out to others or, you know, and a lot of what I have dealt with. So, you know, I am deeply, deeply grateful to be able to sponsor 4 people. I have a wonderful sponsor that I just think the world of. I love her. She is She is very kind and very supportive. And I feel like that is an incredible gift that I've been given as well. But I do believe that to the best of my ability, I work my program. Fear. I cannot say that fear is gone. I basically have worked the same job for 20 years, right? I advanced in my organization over 20 years. And then 4 years ago this month decided I needed a change. So I took a new job, and that has been the biggest teacher in my recovery so far, which is trying to navigate a new environment. I've had two bosses in that time, and a lot of uncertainty about the organization and the future and my role, about not a lot of clarity about what my job is on a day-to-day basis. So, but what I want to convey to all of you is, you know, for in some way, for me, as I look back over those 4 years, things that I am most fearful of, they become gifts of desperation, you know, because I don't want to become complacent in my program. But working, I will tell you, I should have said to you, you know, I got into OA and within a few months, I was working the steps. And it took me about a year to get through them. The fear thing associated with work, right back into the steps. And to the best of my ability, I will tell you, I carry around on a sheet of paper, if you can see it, a 10-step inventory with me every day. It goes with me to the store. It goes with me anywhere I go, because I need to be able to look at fear when it shows up. The other things that I do as I manage fear is I say mantras, and some of the ones that have helped me, especially with fear, is other people's schedules, sharing, timing, when they send emails, you know, does not affect my self-worth. I am on my own journey. So I may vary that a little bit, but again, it is trying to connect with something that is about me and not what other people think. Another one is I am a healthy and vibrant being of light and love. I am so much more than the work that I get paid to do. I practice staying in the day. I practice living in reality in my job. And it's just those, I would never have thought, if you would have said to me a couple of years ago, you know, mantras work, I would have said, okay, you know, I'll be open-minded. When I finally tried them in those moments, they work. They have worked. They do something for me that brings me to a place of knowing that everything is okay. And that's really, really what I want. I get the sense I'm on the right track. I want to tell you that the years have not been without picking up and having a few slips or a rash of self-will. But I tell you, I call my sponsor, I tell her and I did not like doing it. I still don't like doing it. I know that my disease will thrive. The crazy that wants to show up will thrive if I'm not sharing, I want to say weaknesses, but the reality of being human. You know, I think for many years in this program, I thought, you know, I had to reach a certain level of perfection or, you know, if I'm truly recovered, you know, I won't ever feel these things. And that was a sort of a naive, I think, for me, understanding of what recovery is about. Recovery is feeling those feelings and not using food to escape, detach, avoid, run away, deflect, procrastinate. You know, it is feeling those feelings and knowing that before I was flat, I never felt anything because food was the great, you know, flattener of all those emotions. So a couple other things I want to share. Relatively recently, a couple of years maybe, you know, I can say these things and I can intellectualize this program. And I can say all these things that I know, but until I take actions to put those things into practice in my life, they're just words. I mean, sometimes they're words on paper, sometimes they're words in my head. But I'll give you an example, sleep. So I did not do well in the sleep category.
5 minutes remaining, Linda.
Thank you so much, Celeste. I did not do well in the sleep category. And so I had to start taking actions, you know, putting down the electronic devices, changing their temperature in the room, cleaning up the room so it's actually attractive and not a pile of clutter. But just things over time. And when I wake up at 2:30 in the morning, it is not getting up and saying, all right, I can do work. I can do this. I can start. It is staying in bed, breathing, meditating, and getting myself back to sleep. Another really good example is growing up, we never said, I love you. I love you was not something that was said in our house. And when I started dating and ultimately married my husband, you know, they say, I love you all the time. I love you. Talk on the phone. Love you too. Love you. I'm like, damn. I said, when, you know, how did that happen? He goes, oh, we didn't say I love you growing up. He said, I decided one day that that we needed to start doing that. And I was going to start telling my family I loved them when we left each other. And it was a shock. And I said, I can try that. And I started saying to my mother, I love you. And all of them actually. And there was stunned silence. And then stunned silence went to, mm-hmm. And then that went to, we do too. And I guess now 4 years into this, my mother and sister say it all the time. And my dad says, you know, it's kind of in the we do too category, or I do too, or I love you. You know, I've gotten a few I love you too's, but I have to tell you, it's that small steps over time, because I want to tell these people how I feel about them. And one other thing to circle back on my dad, I realized through recovery and working the steps that my father said those things to me growing up, very likely because those are the things that he heard growing up. And I felt such compassion and such empathy for him. When that thought came to me, I was like, of course, hurt people hurt people. That's, you know, that's what goes on in there. So I want to end with a reading from Voices of Recovery. I just read this on October 8th, and I thought to myself, this is a great way for me to check in and see how my recovery is going every day, or most days, or some days. Many of us feel discouraged in situations where our food is in order, yet the rest of our lives seems messy, out of control. We interact with people who don't think, act, or believe as we do. Some events don't follow our master plan. When we step back and realize we are trying to control other people and events, we must remember that this goes against humility, the humility necessary for eliminating self-righteousness and self-absorption that blocks our full recovery. When we start to feel ourselves better than others, let us remember that true humility does not seek power or authority. Rather, it seeks equality and community with mankind. All we can do is live our lives one day at a time and trust that God has a plan. As we turn over our character defects to God in steps 6 and 7, we humbly realize that we are not in charge. We don't know what is best for the world. As we search for the value that God has designated for each of us, we must remember that serenity and humility come with acceptance. So again, I am incredibly grateful to have been asked to be of service to this meeting. I get so much out of all of your shares when I come here, and I will keep coming back because I learn every day from all of you. Thank you so much, and I pass.